Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and talk about on this day where the stock market rebounded and bank stocks went up. Nevertheless, there's still the possibility of a Greek default, and we'll look into how that will affect the big European and American banks and the European economy already in recession as a result of austerity measures. William K. Black, the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board and author of The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One, joins us to analyze the ongoing inability of the Europeans to deal with the euro crisis. Then, if you thought the 99%, 1% divide was bad enough, how about the 99.000037% versus the 0.000063% divide? Joining us is Ari Berman, a contributing editor to The Nation and the author of an article at Tom Dispatch and The Huffington Post, The 0.000063% Election, How the Politics of the Super Rich Became American Politics. We will discuss how the super rich have taken over our politics in this election via the super PACs that now dominate campaigns. Then finally, we will look into the overwhelming vote today in the UN Security Council, the UN General Assembly, condemning the Syrian regime. James Galvin, a specialist on Syria at UCLA, joins us to assess whether the Assad family regime, with the help of Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, Cuba, and Venezuela, can kill enough Syrians to hold on to power, or whether the growing opposition inside the country will be able to fight back and turn the tables. Joining us now is William K. Black, who is the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loan disasters of the 1980s. Currently, he's a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He was executive director of the Institute for Fraud Prevention from 2005 to 2007, and he's the author of the best-selling book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. Welcome to Background Briefing, William K. Black.
Thank you.
And there's a kind of a paradox here, or a bit of a contradiction here, in as much as most of the news today, the stock market went up to its highest point of this year today, and bank stocks are up, including, I think, Bank of America up by 3.5%. And yet there's still this lingering notion that the Greece could default, and that the European banks will take a hit, and it'll echo back here. So, give us a sense of whether or not there's a mixed signal here.
Well, a series of the stories you've talked about are interconnected. What you're seeing in both Europe and the United States is that wealth is enormously concentrated in the financial sectors, and the financial sectors have dominant political power in Europe and the United States. And in both countries, they have severe problems in that they have tons of bad assets. And among the really bad assets the banks have are sovereign debt of places like Greece and Portugal and Spain and Ireland and such. And none of these countries has a sovereign currency anymore. And because they don't have a sovereign currency, they're at much, much greater risk of default.
So what do we make then, Bill Black, of the euro surging, which reversed an early decline after the reports that the Eurozone central banks had agreed to exchange Greek bonds they hold for new bonds as part of a deal to help Greece avoid falling off the precipice?
The strength of the dollar and the euro in terms of international exchange has almost nothing to do with this crisis. The issue is default, which is a different question than what the value of the euro should be compared to other currencies. The overall euro, there's no reason why it isn't going to pay off. In other words, if you have a euro and you go to a bank, you're going to get paid. So that's not the question. So what is going on, however, is there's a fundamental problem in the structure, two fundamental problems in the structure of Europe. One is with regard to the euro, in that they've created a transnational currency with nations that are in vastly different economic conditions. And there's no one in charge of Europe, and Europe is not a United States of Europe. In other words, when Greece gets in trouble, we don't say, that's a problem, and money is going to flow from the federal government to Greece, and we'll fix the problem. No, what happens is the Germans start screaming about how awful the Greeks are. And so you're actually seeing instead of ever closer union, which, as you know, is the rallying cry in particular of the French about the EU, the European Union, you're seeing ever greater disunity.
Well, my understanding is that a number of prominent politicians and in Germany and in business leaders have started openly talking about how Greece is awash with phantom pensions, and the rich don't pay their taxes, and they're absolutely fed up with it. And apparently, some of the meetings behind the scenes between the German representatives and the Greek representatives have gotten pretty nasty. What's your sense, Bill Black, of how much everybody's sort of shuffling the 900-pound gorilla in the living room around and denying its presence in terms of the real exposure of German and French banks?
Oh, enormously. That's the reason, after all, that the West German, in the old days, the German chancellor, Merkel, has lost 6 of the last 7 state elections, and has done so in large part because Germany has continued to do bailouts. Why has Germany continued to do bailouts, and why has Merkel, despite these political defeats, continued to do it? Well, because the bailouts, at least to this point, have the principal beneficiary has been German banks. And so she cares more about the German banks than losing particular state elections, because she fears that a financial crisis among German banks would lead to an even greater bailout, domestic bailout in this case, and sweep her party out of power for a decade or more.
Well, I heard Simon Johnson today speaking, and he's a former chief economist for the World Bank. And in contrast to the good news on Wall Street today with the stock market and bank stocks and GM stock, of course, GM had a record profit here in the United States, but of course, it's offset by record losses in Europe, which we may get into what's happening in Europe in contrast to the United States. So I'm still having trouble reconciling what seems to me to be a really dire reality in Europe that they still can't deal with, and all of this is sort of optimistic news today.
Well, Europe has decided to throw the periphery to the wolves, and in particular the southern periphery, and, you know, in European terms, mostly Catholic periphery. And you know that religion is only vaguely in the background. I can tell you as an American, when you go there, the openly racist explanation, and this comes from top financial leaders, you know, wearing nice suits and being CEOs of top financial institutions, is just staggering from an American perspective. Just the degree of hate, and it's expressed in American blacks, who they claim caused the entire global crisis. It's expressed as Turks, and then expressed ethnically as the whole southern tier, but in particular the Greeks and such. And, much of it comes from Germans or Germanic-speaking Swiss who have a bad history in all of this. And, you know, the head European Parliament, his first name is Jean-Claude, but the name after that is Juncker. And, you know, the Junkers in their famous role in Germany and such. So this is awakening lots of the darkest hates and the darkest fears in Europe. And Simon is absolutely correct. They have not fixed it in the least. And to fix it, they need both an economic fix and they need a political fix, and they're going absolutely the wrong direction in Europe. First, they let the thing twist slowly in the wind, which when you're dealing with a financial crisis is a terrible idea. And second, they've actually made austerity worse. And this should be a real caution to the United States, because the Eurozone has just gone back into recession because of this quest to balance the budget. So they're having their double-dip recession right now.
And do you think that that Obama and the Democrats can make that case? Because the Republicans want to do what the Europeans have done. They want austerity budgets. I mean, you know, Obama's budget was ridiculed by the Republicans because it didn't deal with the deficit. In fact, it had stimulus.
Right. But what you see is the administration not even attempting to defend it. The United States has, compared to Europe, been an area of strength in this recovery. Obviously, the stimulus was grossly inadequate compared to the loss of private sector demand from the Great Recession, but it has still prevented us from going back into an ever-deepening recession, and it's led to a modest recovery, whereas Europe has shot its, well, probably aimed to shoot Greece in the foot and shot itself in the foot instead.
So what's your sense then, William K. Black, of whether there's going to be another shoe to drop? As I mentioned, Simon Johnson seemed to think that the European banks are, and the Eurozone and the European Central Bank aren't dealing with the underlying problems, in particularly with Greece and with the southern tier, and that that also involves Ireland, but Portugal and Spain and Italy. And he also said that the U.S. banks, because of the banking lobby, are not prepared to recognize how it's going to impact them. They don't have any reserves on hand at the end of the day. I think because of this too big to fail notion, they're basically not acting responsibly.
Well, in terms of shoes yet to drop, it is going to be something like being in Imelda Marcos's closet during an earthquake. Just to talk about the biggest shoes to drop, and some of these are already in the process of dropping. First, every government that has adopted austerity has fallen in Europe as soon as it came up for election. So there's tremendous political instability. Second, unemployment in the periphery is now characteristically 20% or thereabouts. And for new, you know, 18-year-old to 22-year-old types, it's closer to 50%. So if you have two kids, one of them is likely to be unemployed, and emigration is becoming severe. If you're a college graduate in Ireland, the norm is to leave Ireland now, for example. So this is going to be the lost generation. It's having devastating effects on all of these nations. It's going to lead to increased hostility within the EU, political instability in most of the nations of the EU, and they're either going to have to go to something much more like a true United States of Europe, and the odds are very poor against that, or they're more likely to go to a much smaller, purer euro system. Basically, it doesn't appear now that they would really like the Greeks to be part of the euro, or for that matter, most anybody else in the periphery as well.
So they, but there's a difference between wanting something to happen and making it happen, right? They can't let Greece fall off the cliff at the same time they want to get rid of them. So what is the next move?
Well, the next move is, that's precisely the problem. All of the appropriate responses involve very substantial pain. And since they try to avoid pain, they are always looking for a silver bullet solution. And that means, of course, there aren't silver bullet solutions very often, so they don't do much of anything. What could be done, and the reason that the euro went up today is, as you said, the European Central Bank, the ECB, became more active in purchasing bonds. And that's the closest thing to a silver bullet solution there is. The ECB could act as a true European institution and say that we are going to use our ability to create money. You know, from the standpoint of the ECB, it is more like a sovereign currency, the euro, to fix the problems in Europe in the periphery. But that would take a really bold move, and as you probably recall, one of the senior officials in the European Central Bank, a prominent German banker, quit the ECB now about 5 months ago, demanding that it not take any action to provide relief to the periphery. And so there would be an intense German opposition to the ECB fulfilling a more transnational role.
Well, we have to also, I think, into this mix add the fact that Brent crude rose today, topping $120 a barrel, in part in response to the Iranians saying they're going to cut off oil to the their European customers preemptively because of the European Union's boycott, which is supposed to take place in July. So the Iranians are saying, okay, we're not going to allow you to wean yourself off our oil. We're going to force you to go cold turkey. That's rattling the markets as well. It would seem if you've got a recession, the last thing you want is a high price of gasoline.
Well, this is one of the major unstated stories in terms of politics and economics intersection in many places. So, for example, you had the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, claiming that Texas was an economic miracle and it was due to his brilliance. Well, all the oil patch states are doing better by far than they were doing because the price of energy has gone up. So Oklahoma looks better, Texas looks much better, even Louisiana looks better because of that. That's the only thing Putin has going for him,
right,
in Russia. And there are, of course, a number of other energy-rich nations in the world. If they're net exporters, they are big winners. But if you get a war, or even if you get a blockage of the Straits of Hormuz, and Iran is most assuredly getting ready to create at least a credible threat,
right,
of attacking supertankers in the Gulf of Hormuz, you would have an immediate dramatic effect.
Well, Will Black, I'm afraid we've run out of time here, but I thank you so much for joining us and giving some different nuance to the so-called good news on the market today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with William K. Black, the former litigation director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, who investigated the savings and loan disaster of the 1980s. Currently, he's a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and he was the executive director of the Institute for Fraud Prevention from 2005 to 2007. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the 0.000063% who are buying our elections through their super PACs.
Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck or a pound, a mark, a yen, a buck or a pound is all that makes the world go around. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money.